And we're back. We just heard some Shudder to Think with Chocolate and some ads before that. And then you heard Swizz with Nine. I am joined today by Rob Avery. Full disclosure to everyone, I guess I should have said this earlier. Rob and I work at the same company, so that's how this came to be. So just in case anyone's like, how did this, what's going on here? Now you know. Let's talk more about DC and the punk scene. Now, what kind of time frame, like when is your kind of like DC punk focus, I guess?
Sure. So I guess the first band that I was ever exposed to was probably the first punk band that most people get exposed to, which would be Minor Threat. I had the luxury of having an older cousin that was into hip hop and metal. So I got Iron Maiden and Slayer from him, but I also got Public Enemy and Run DMC from him. And then in the neighborhood, you have a friend with an older brother that's into things like My Bloody Valentine and Ride and all the shoegaze stuff and The Cure and kind of British influenced music. And then I got into middle school, late 80s, and you find the kids with the Mohawks and you gravitate towards them. And, you know, you get the Sex Pistols and the Ramones and Minor Threat. And I heard Minor Threat, and it just blew my mind. And that kind of sent me down the rabbit hole of what most kids did back before the internet, which is look at the label, look at the liner notes, and see what other bands they thanked. And I saw Discord and was just basically like, I'm going to buy everything that's on this record label. And I don't need to go into kind of a history lesson about Discord, because I'm sure most people know about Ian MacKaye and, you know, what he did for the scene and what he did for just music in general. But it was a super big influence musically as well as kind of ethically, how they put on shows and how they only charge $5 to get in, the kind of connection with things like Food Not Bombs and just the political aspect of the music that and the scene that they kind of built out there. But that was really my first entry into it. And again, this is probably late 80s, early 90s. So as new bands were emerging from Discord that they were putting out, whether it was like Jawbox or folks like Nation of Ulysses, anytime a new record release came out of there, like, and you just devour it and listen to it over and over and over again. So
now you mentioned that Fugazi played in Delaware and that you got to open up for them. Did you get to go and see a bunch of shows in DC? Was that kind of your main place that you went to go see them, or were you going like hometown and other places to see shows?
So I would say, gosh, you know, the vast majority of the shows that I went to from the age 13 through 16 were all local. And again, we lived in a college town that had a really good scene and some cool venues, and a big group of us actually started putting on shows and promoting them ourselves. And it's crazy, you know, you have a touring band show up and there's like a 16-year-old at Girls Inc. Community Center that's like showing you where the green room is, and they're like, what in the heck did I just get into? But it's actually that group of kids that was putting on shows were the ones that brought Fugazi through. I guess it was, if I had to put a date on it, 92, 93, something like that. But the majority of the out of area shows, I would say, would be Philadelphia. I had a lot of really great venues like J.C. Dobbs and the TLA. Like I said, D.C. was a big part of that, but it was, you know, a handful of shows a year. It wasn't like I was going down there every weekend. That's one of the great parts about growing up there. It's I can get to Baltimore in an hour. I can get to D.C. in an hour and a half. I can get to New York in 2 hours. I can get to Philly in half an hour. So it was really nice to be in that area, to be able to get to all those different little mini scenes. And again, like, I don't think we knew at the time how good we had it, not only with our scene that we had, but with the proximity to all these other scenes. And it wasn't until I was much older and was a touring musician where I got to go, you know, you're in the middle of Iowa or something, and, and 15 kids show up to a show, and you're like, hey, what's the scene like here? And you're like, the whole scene is here, all 15 of us. So we were really lucky in that regard.
It is interesting that I think that the scene that's around punk is probably the one that is the most kind of, well, obviously, like, it's got the DIY ethic is where it kind of originated. So the ability to do more things and have kind of more of a communal aspect of it feels much more kind of present in punk versus other types of music.
It's part of the DNA. I mean, I wasn't in the band was around for Wizards Fire was around for about 5 years before I joined it. So I was literally like, I dropped out of college the second semester of my junior year. I've been friends with those guys forever. And they said, hey, we just got a record deal. We're going to move to Connecticut for a couple months and write and record a record. And then after that, we're going to go to Europe for 3 months. Do you want to come? And it's like, well, I guess the art school can wait. This is an awesome opportunity, and I'm going to jump into it. But I did jump in midstream where they had already kind of gained a following and had a record label and had some traction. But prior to that, it was literally, there's a zine back in the day called Maximum Rock and Roll, and they would come out with an annual version of it called Book Your Own Fucking Life. And it was kids that ran VFW halls to like normal clubs, and it'd be a name and a phone number. And you'd pick up the phone and you'd say, hey, we're coming through in June. Do you have any openings? And they would say, all right, you know, there's a date here and we can pencil you in. And those guys were bumming change in between shows to get enough money to get a gas to get to the next spot, and recording dubbing tapes in the van to be able to sell demos. And they really kind of paid their dues. And if it wasn't for that infrastructure of the punk scene with things like Book Your Own Effing Life, that kind of stuff wouldn't be possible.
So that's super interesting. I feel like that's kind of something that's lost today. Like, there's so much that's changed, obviously, from the time when you started to now. But I'd say, like, one of the things that isn't, like, roped under just the internet, but I think it is starting to come back. But the idea that you could, like, as, like, a 13-year-old go and be like, I'm going to set up a show at this VFW, and, like, that kind of, like, gumption, I guess, to go and do that is something that I think also is within punk, and I think fell off to the wayside for a bit and now might be coming back? Question mark?
I wish I could say I was dialed into the scene to a point where I could have a valid opinion, but I think I would be disingenuous by giving you an opinion. I will say that the kind of the punk rock mindset of DIY and figuring stuff out has really helped me from a career standpoint, getting me to where I am. So there's an aspect of it where it's not being afraid to jump in and try something new, knowing that you'll figure something out or you'll do your best to kind of make the best of a bad situation. But one of the biggest things that I learned is that failure is not a big deal. You fall on your face and you learn from it and you do better the next time. That kind of ethos that kind of the punk and hardcore scene throw out there has served me well from kind of a vocational standpoint.
So the lessons that we've learned here is, kids, if you're in art school right now, drop out, join a punk band. That's what we've learned.
Pretty much.
Well, I know you said you don't want to be disingenuous, so let's get to something where you are definitely genuine in article. Let's play some more tracks here. Where should we go next on this journey into DC scene?
When I think of DC outside of Fugazi, the first band that jumps into my mind is typically Jawbox. They're on my Mount Rushmore, right? Like, they are put on a pedestal. I love them for so many different reasons. But they did do the whole mid to late 90s rush for major labels to just hoover up all of the emerging alternative punk or whatever acts to try to make as much money as humanly possible out of them.
Went really well for all the bands.
In hearing interviews and listening to podcasts, it does sound like their path through Atlantic Records, they were given a lot of creative freedom. So them going from Discord to Atlantic, while the sound quality of the record is punched up a ton, I really do think that they maintain that integrity of who they are as a band, and it really, really shines through. And then I've followed the singer, songwriter, guitar player, Jay Robbins, his kind of trajectory after Jawbox as a producer and an engineer. He owns a studio out of the Baltimore area where he records and puts out a lot of good records himself, as well as still is involved in the scene as a producer and engineer, and just amazing, amazing songwriter. Not only him, but obviously the rest of the band. But the first time I ever heard them, I'm like, the fact that that's just so angular and different, but melodic. It's this weird melange or mashup of stuff that sounds like jazz, stuff that sounds like math rock, and just kind of discordant and weird. But then it's beautiful and it's a lullaby at the same time. They are just, again, like, you know, you say that that Minor Threat was like the thing that blew that scene up for me and got me kind of hooked. Jawbox is kind of at the center of it, where it feels like it pulled in from so many different sources of kind of influence that it's just this crazy mashup that just I love. And the song is called Cruel Swing from that Atlantic Records major label debut.
And you know what? Let's do two others after that, just to, because we talked a lot. Let's get some music in here.
All right. So going to the other end of the spectrum, and this band, speaking of heart, has a very interesting place in my heart because it was the very first place that I took my wife on a date. Girlfriend at the time, she was definitely a yin to my yang, where she was a jock on scholarship playing soccer at the university. And I was a punk kid with dreadlocks and riding a skateboard to class. And we're this weird kind of mixed couple of opposites. I was like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? She's like, I don't know. I don't have anything going on. I was like, oh, I'm going to a show in DC. Do you want to come? She was like, yeah, sure. So her and her friend came with us. And in hindsight, I was 18 at the time and not very empathetic or mindful of whatever anybody else was doing, because you're an 18 year old and you're very much an ego driven jerk. I took her to see Damnation. So Damnation is one of the heaviest bands and of that time, and I still put them up there on a pedestal. It's hardcore, but it's also got a lot of kind of metal to it. When you hear the song kick in, you just want to jump on the stage and start walking on people's heads. It's heavy. It's emotional. And I know the term emo gets kind of mixed up. And emo is obviously a big part of DC and with Rites of Spring. And a lot of people point to that as the kind of the initial emo stuff. But the gut-wrenching emotion that you hear in the singer, Mike McTernan from Damnation, is just undeniable. And so when I think of Damnation, I think of that first date with my wife, which I can't believe she stayed with me after I took her to a show and basically said, bye, I'm going to jump into the pit. I'll see you later. And she watched from the sidelines and was probably thinking, like, who is this person? Why did they just leave me here in this weird club in the middle of a not so great section of Washington, D.C.? And but yeah, she stuck with me. So that's proof that love goes beyond just the veneer. And then how about speaking of the band that got me into all of it, why don't we play one of the classics from Minor Threat called In My Eyes?
That sounds like a very good plan. So we'll play some Jawbox, some Damnation, and some Minor Threat, and then we'll be back and we'll talk more about stuff and junk. So everyone, here is some more DC bands. I'm joined by Rob Avery, who you might know from many bands. We'll talk more about maybe some of those later, but let's get to these songs first. Keep It Locked. This is Grade A Explosives, CJLO 1690 AM, America's birthday special.